Herzlich willkommen zu Personality Talks, deinem Podcast für ein freies und inspiriertes Leben voller Persönlichkeit. Was will ich, wer bin ich und was brauche ich eigentlich für ein rundum zufriedenes Leben? Tue ich das, was ich liebe? Wenn du dir diese Fragen auch schon immer mal stellen wolltest und keine Angst vor den Antworten hast, dann bist du genau richtig hier bei uns. Ich bin Simone, Yoga- und Meditationslehrerin und habe zusammen mit meiner Freundin Sabine Personality Mag gegründet. Ein Online-Magazin rund um Persönlichkeitsentwicklung, Self-Care, Wellbeing, Wellness und Empowerment. Personality Talks ist der Podcast zum Magazin, in dem wir spannende Persönlichkeiten, Experten und Coaches zum Gespräch treffen, euch unsere Tipps für ein erfülltes Leben verraten und voneinander lernen. Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Podcast-Folge Personality Talks. Mein heutiger Gast, Lara Heimann. Lara ist seit 27 Jahren praktizierende Physiotherapeutin und Yogalehrerin. Sie hat in der Duke University studiert und ihr Studium dann nochmal als Physiotherapeutin fortgesetzt an der Stanford University. Aufgrund ihrer Leidenschaft für Bewegung hat sie eine 200 Stunden Yogalehrerausbildung gemacht und hat dann festgestellt, Mensch, der Teil Anatomie, der kommt eigentlich viel zu kurz, das könnte man besser machen. In den folgenden Jahren hat sie dann die eigene Yoga-Methode LIT-Yoga kreiert, in der Physiologie, Kinesiologie, Neurologie und funktionelle Bewegungsmuster eine große Rolle spielen. 2011 gab es ihr eigenes LIT-Yoga-Studio in Princeton, New Jersey und sie hat angefangen, Yoga über ihre Online-Plattform LIT Daily zu teilen. Wir sprechen in dieser Folge über die Bedeutung von Bewegung, über diese Kombination aus Physio- und Neuroentwicklungstraining, über die körperlich-seelische Beziehung, wie Lara eigentlich mit Yoga in Berührung gekommen ist, was sie neben der Anatomie in den bestehenden Methoden vermisst hat, warum sie glaubt, dass die Welt einen neuen Yoga-Stil braucht, über ihre Philosophie hinter der LIT-Methode, über Spiritualität und ob das nötig ist in der Yoga-Praxis, warum Kraft und Körpermitte so wichtig sind und wie wir unseren Kindern beibringen, sich achtsam und gesund zu bewegen. Ich wünsche euch viel Freude mit der Folge mit Lara Heimann. Das Interview ist auf Englisch. A really warm welcome to the podcast, Lara Heimann. Hi, Lara.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Simone.
Thank you. So my first question to you is like, what would you say, how does a typical day in your life looks like? Or how did the day today look like until now?
Oh, that's a great question. So today is Monday. I teach... I have an online platform, and it's called the LIT Daily, and on there are two subscription options. One is a LIT Daily and one is the LIT Prime. And the LIT Prime is all the things we have in our LIT Daily, which is over 800 classes in our library. But we also have a live by Zoom, like it's like a virtual studio. So I teach about six classes on that. So I taught this morning already a class on my LIT Prime. I'm having this interview with you. And then the rest of the day, I will have a lot of meetings, which I have a lot of. So I have about 5 hours of meetings today. But every day is slightly different. I teach 5 out of 7 days a week. And then when I'm not teaching, I'm either creating classes or creating content for trainings or workshops or corporate event. I have corporate contracts. So I'm kind of all over. And then I have a podcast myself. And so I'm also recording for podcasts. So we have two episodes a week. And so I am recording for that. And then I'm a mom. I only have one child at home right now, and he's a senior in high school, which I don't know, it's like the last year before university. So he's really gone most of the day. And then my husband and my animals. So it's always a full day. And being an entrepreneur is like that. The job is never over. It's just like you have to put like a pin. And you probably know that there's always things to do. But I love it. I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
And how much movement is there inside? So there's clearly movement when you teach or when you develop your trainings, but what would you say apart from perhaps the teaching? Is there like certain movements, practices or things you always integrate daily because you say, I need it for myself, that is apart from teaching, and there's always like this, are you like a perhaps like a this 10 or 15 minutes practice person or something like that apart from what you're doing?
Well, I would say that the method, lit method, is so comprehensive that I don't really feel the need to do a lot of other things. It includes, it's really just a huge umbrella: physical therapy drills, mobility, stretching, high intensity interval training, and endurance. And then, of course, the yoga poses and sequences all infused in that. So it's very comprehensive. And so I never feel in my body like I need to go do something. But that's also the privilege that I am moving so much in my everyday life. And the habit that I formed of good postural training within all my movement. I don't wake up, you know, I'm 53, I wake up feeling really energized and I don't feel stiff or I don't feel an age, you know? So I don't really have something except I do love to take walks in nature. That's really, that's for my body, but for my mental health as well. I love being outside. I have a dog, so I try and take walks. It's harder when it's not as pretty out, I'm not as inspired, but those are that's my main movement form. But I do a lot of strength training with my body weight, and that is been really, you know, very satisfying so far. So
there's a special method that you developed, and I was asking me a lot of questions before when I prepared that interview. But because what is really interesting me is how the way developed of like founding your own yoga method, why you came to that idea, what was missing in the existing things, the existing styles. But before, and it is a real question because I didn't try the method and I didn't practice with you. And I also didn't do the class that we got from Motivity, the studio that requested us, because Sabine, my partner, did. So to a person who is like practicing yoga for like almost, I don't know, 15 years teaching, but didn't hear of your method, how would you explain the method to somebody who is like coming like me and don't know anything about it? What is special? What is like, what is making the difference to all the other existing things we are finding on the market?
That's a great question. Well, it really goes back to my own experience. I've been teaching, practicing for 27 years, and I've been a physical therapist for 27 years. So for a while, I was kind of following the yoga, you know, books and teachings, and really staying in that lane and not applying my physical therapy brain there, because I felt like this is something that you're told what to do and I'm doing it and all that. And after I was practicing for a while, kind of more classical vinyasa, I was sensing in my own body some beginnings of repetitive strain. And also seeing this in my students. Also, I was quite frankly not very, I didn't find any curiosity there, if that makes sense. I don't want to say I was bored. I wasn't bored, but I wasn't feeling challenged. And so I started to, my specialization in physical therapy is neurological rehab. So working with people who've had a neurological impairment. And we do a lot of things on the ground, a lot of what's called developmental training. And I was seeing in these stroke patients who have incredible impairments, amazing changes in their posture, in their functional movement, in their balance. And I thought, well, maybe if I applied a little bit of that, and I started doing it on my own. So I added that into mine. All of a sudden, I became much more interested, much more engaged, and my practice actually just changed dramatically in 2 months. And what I mean by that is I felt I felt embodied in a way that I hadn't been. And so when people ask what the difference is, I think a typical yoga class, this isn't everyone, well, you will come in with your existing imbalances, because we all have them because of our modern daily life, and you'll just start moving. You might sit and ground, but then you start like sun salutations and you go through these things and you're doing it, but you're not necessarily embodying it and using that as an opportunity to examine where you compensate, where you release your core, where you overly round your back, where are you just bringing in your existing habits on the mat and perhaps amplifying them or exacerbating them. And with LIT, it is a matter of we start by resetting, it's called the reset, resetting our neutral spine and neutral pelvis, engaging our core in a variety of ways, the way we did as we were adapting in our developmental years, and then applying that new wiring to our movement. So each time you come, you can examine like, what is my body like today? How do I need to retrain, rewire, reset to move with more efficiency? Efficiency can be translated as grace. It's overall movement integrity, meaning not one area is getting overly burdened, but you're moving with this efficiency. And what that translates into is energy. You feel more energized and not depleted. So I think that the big difference is we're examining how we can move better, how we can hold ourselves better, how we can breathe better. What are the mechanisms for that? Applying them on the mat so that the real work is then done off the mat. Oh, I learned this today about my neutral spine and neutral posture, how to breathe into my side and back ribs. And I'm going to do that if I'm sitting at work. Oh, I learned that, you know, my tendency is to kind of tip my pelvis and my back gets really compressed. How do I fill that up and change that? You know, so how do I hinge in my hips as opposed to tilt in the, because our bodies will move. They will execute the movement, but it isn't necessarily executed in the most intelligent or sustainable way. So what I think a lot of it comes down to the training. If teachers are just taught poses and sequences, but aren't really taught about the body that moves you into these, moves you into the transitions. Transitions are really where things can fall apart or suboptimal movement can happen. So if you're not being taught that, educated, so a big thing we talk about education, energy, and empowerment, the three E's. So when you get on the mat, I want everyone to feel like they're empowered. They know what this body is. It's not just something they're moving around, but it's like coming home and understanding it. Because I don't know how it is in Germany, but we're not taught anything about the body in grade school. There's nothing. You don't learn anything. You might have a gymnastics class or a gym class or something, but you're not taught about the body and the biomechanics and, you know, how to hold yourself in space, how to strengthen your shoulders, which are really attached to the back at the rib cage. Most people just think that the shoulders is the humerus, the ball here, and don't even understand that most of their strength, stability, adaptability comes from the back of their body. So that's in a nutshell. I think that's the big difference, is that I want people to not just be injury free. I want them to feel joy with movement. And to do that, there has to be a curiosity and education about this body, because it contains everything. It contains our history, our emotions, our breath, our organs of life, our energy, and our vitality. And so it's not just like this thing we move around, but it is really important we understand how to move it and serve ourselves the most optimal way.
Mm-hmm. And take us a little bit with you. So you had been a physiologist, and then you had a long yoga practice. How was the point like where you came in contact with yoga? And perhaps also interesting to know with which kind of practice you grow. Are you coming from a vinyasa, ashtanga field around? And what was at the end of point where you had been saying, okay, this separation is not feeding me anymore, because what I was understanding is like you had this physiology part that was serving you and you had your practice, but you didn't combine it. And I also read on the website, like, why are we separating this knowledge from the yoga practice? So where was the turning point? Was there like a personal experience or something?
Yes, I think, again, it gives back to, I was working with this stroke patient and had him on all fours doing, you know, crawling and quadruped movement, mm-hmm. things that you might look around now and see this is done a lot more, but nobody was doing any kind of functional training, getting on the ground and doing a lot of stuff unless it was forward folds, right? And forward folds to me are like, why? Why are we doing so many of those? We're like folded in half all the time. Mm-hmm. So it was more just like, I think it was like an epiphany. I was like, wait, I've been taking off my PT hat and not examining the movement. And if this is really sustainable and empowering movement, and just kind of looking at, like, yoga can be approached a little bit like a religion, and that it has this box that you cannot change it. And to me, every movement practice, every spiritual practice should always be evolving, and should be evolving to the needs of the people that are practicing it. And our needs are different today than maybe you would say 100 years ago. And I think there's always an invitation to examine anything and think, like, how can we shift this to make it work the best for a lot of people? Because also yoga in a vinyasa. So yeah, my background was in vinyasa. That's what I was really exposed to, Ashtanga and vinyasa, which Ashtanga is a form of vinyasa. But I found it to be a little, I'm like very creative. So I found it to be a little bit boxed in, and, you know, you're kind of facing forward and then you're facing side and you're facing forward. And I was like, I want to go up. I want to go down. I want to go around the mat. That's how our body, our movement variability is super important, not only for our joints and our tissues, but for our brain. You know, movement has been shown to be a massive, just a massive initiator for brain neuron growth and complexity. But if we're not really complex in our movement, if we're doing the same thing all over and over again, our brain gets bored. Our brain loves novelty. We have these like switchboards in our brain that turn on with novelty, that really pay attention. So I try and always incorporate something that's a little bit different and unique, not to be different for the sake of it, but because I know all of a sudden people pay attention more. Their brain is lit up. That's where we have growth. Mm-hmm. So we change our brain through our movement, and then our brain becomes better wired to adapt to movement off the mat. So I have tons of lit people who say, oh, I do this, and then I did this hike, and normally with hiking, I get pain in my knees or in my low back, but I hiked 15 miles and I felt amazing. It's a carryover that's happening from the body to the brain. And so I think I saw that so much in my neurological rehab that I thought, if I can do this with somebody who's very impaired and is making changes, then what would it be like if I just applied it to myself, an able-bodied person? And what I saw was an amazing growth in my own practice. And I think that curiosity was lacking, and it still is lacking a little bit in the yoga world, but it's changed a lot. You know, when I get in and for me, it's critical thinking, like, why are we doing this? Why are we standing on our head? Our head is not made for weight bearing. And I remember being one of the first to really call this out. And a lot of people didn't like that. They're like, I love headstands. And I'd say, why do you like it? Your ego likes it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But your head, your skull, your cervical spine, your cervical disc, the arteries and veins that come out of there are probably not going to like it. And there, if you want to get strong and work on inversion, get your head off the ground and work on dolphin. Way harder. So something is harder, sometimes people get bristly. And I'm like, let's like look at challenge as what it is, amazing. So it's I think that's what yoga has always been about, but it has, like, yoga can sometimes appear performative as opposed to as an inner exploration. Where do I get frustrated? Where do I speak negatively to myself? How can I change that through the work on the mat? And so I think all of those are brought in, but if you don't layer in the education, the why, then people are going to be kind of like stuck on this map of just doing it because their teacher taught them a certain way. And my teacher said that this is so good for my, you know, whatever inversion, you know, and they're not like thinking about, well, okay, maybe that is what that person found to be true, but we need to examine if it's actually going to work for everyone. So for me, even though my practice is seemingly looking advanced and stuff, I want to really let everyone know that everyone should feel welcome in a yoga class, because you start to learn about your body. You don't have to be able to do this or that or whatever. And so some of those practices, it was like you could either do it and not necessarily do it well, or you're not feeling very welcomed into that class. So I think all of it's layered in. I just really found that it needed a little shakeup and to make it accessible and sustainable. A lot of yoga practices, I dare say you're not going to see many Ashtangis in their 50s or 60s practicing anymore, because they've just overly loaded their joints and it's not working anymore. And we don't want to get to that point. There's no reason we should be injuring ourselves. That was a long answer.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's an interesting approach, because that always an interesting way of thinking that you have to challenge the thing that is there. I'm honest with this, because I think on one hand it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, like in challenging the thing what is good for every individual body. Also, when 20 people are in class and you teach a quite advanced class, you will have people that are not feeling this is good for my hips or this is good for my neck or whatever. On the other hand, I had the experience that staying with the old traditions, that is also and the philosophy and everything that comes with it, the energy movement that we have, perhaps, and a headstand, that all these old things that the practice transmits made for me in a lot of classes and a lot of trainings sometimes the difference to, let's say, classical physiological practice, or however you want to call it. But one thing you say that is really interesting, this thing of always the same movements, because that's something I thought about also a lot, because, and I want to know your opinion, because one thing is, like, if we come, let's say, for 90 days to the mat and we are always doing the same, that has quite an effect on us, because it is like it gets this routine. There is always the same movement. We arrive in something we are doing, but you are saying quite, or you said, let's not always do that, because if we are always doing the same, our body gets used to certain things and we are perhaps falling always into certain movement patterns, something I also witnessed with myself. So would you say that, like, always doing these same movements over and over again is really something that the body and also the brain don't need? So that we, like with your method, how you are doing it, like that we always need these new impulses, and always, if it's like, and also if it is just one little thing that we are changing.
Yeah, I all of that. So I will say, like, the blueprint of a lit class, there is repetition in it, and there is a thread line. So from one class to the other, you are getting, it's not like every class is totally brand new. We start off with a reset. We start on the back. We usually do a bridge, some kind of core abdominal work. We come into quadruped. We do some kind of movement there. We come into dolphin. All of that is to ignite the postural muscles, because the postural muscles, for a lot of people, are not as strong and stable as they need to be. They're not as easy. They're not as wired to fire quickly, which is what they're really made to do. So the postural muscles are, I have a skeleton behind me, but if you imagine a skeleton and you start layering on muscles right on the bones, the ones closest to the bones are your postural muscles. These are muscles that are incredibly important for energy. They can handle long amounts. They have endurance capacity to them. But if we are overly using the muscles above them, the more superficial ones, those get tired quicker. And then we feel tired. So when we talk about energy and transmitting, our bodies are energy, and therefore they impact our movement. They impact the way we feel in our head. They impact our emotions. So we always start with a reset to really start basically infusing that energy and connecting to it. Then we start our movement patterns. And within the lit class, we have some of the standard things you'd see in other class. We have Sun Sal 1, which is a little different. We do a 90-90 lunge, not a traditional Anjaneyasana, because that's a half kneel. That is part of the developmental sequences we did when we were young, when we came out of the womb. Half kneel gets our spine in alignment, our pelvis can open up the front of the hip. We don't have to sink into our pelvis in that Anjaneyasana style, which is really just sinking into joints and not holding with our postural muscles. So it's done really intelligently. It's lighting up the postural muscles so that we can then expand out and start to move in all kinds of ways. So that's where we bring in some of the creative movement you aren't necessarily doing in daily life, moving in all the different planes of biomechanics. And then we do what's called a stream, where we repeat these sequences with some add-ons, some changes, some amplifications, maybe some plyometrics, maybe some hopping, handstanding, whatever. Those are always optional. That's the great thing. It's like you can decide for yourself, do you want to take this option or do you want to stick with what we did the first time? And that is that encoding in the brain wiring. We do repeat those sequences in this stream to allow for that. It's the hard wiring to layer down. So we want novelty for that switchboard in our brain that really lights up for novelty, which influences the parts of our brain that are important for processing memory, like our hippocampus. So we want those novelty things, but then we layer with the repetition to hardwire it in our motor cortex.
So less repeating and more like little influences, little changes.
Yeah, I think the difference is you're not coming and doing the same routine every time, but you are redoing the same blueprint. Mm-hmm. So the blueprint is the foundation, mm-hmm. and then within it, we change things up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we have over 800 classes in our library, because there are so many different ones. Each one has mm-hmm. a theme, but what you will find across the board, whether it's a 15-minute class or a 90-minute class, is the blueprint is in there to some degree.
Mm-hmm. There is a question that came up from another interview. How important is the teacher? Do you think the teacher plays an important role in the method you are doing? Or would you say the teacher is just there, he's holding space, he's explaining, but the main thing is the students, is all about them?
No, the teacher is very important. Because you can have a beautiful language written out, but the orator is the one who is bringing the energy to it and is impacting how it lands for people. So the teacher, everyone has to go through my training to teach on my platform. We have over 800 teachers around the world who are teaching like in studios, like Jennifer and Jen are, but they're very important because they're educating. You have to be educated about your body because most people aren't. And if you, again, like if somebody's just telling you, hey, hinge forward, but they're not giving you the nuances of how you do that. When you hinge, you actually maintain a neutral spine. You maintain engagement so your rib cage doesn't thrust forward and it shortens your back body. And to do that, a lot of people have to really bend their knees, and that's great. Because they what they've heard is the opposite. Keep your knees straight, fold forward. So you're just kind of landing over. So the teacher is transmitting all of this information in real time to the people in front of them. And that the teacher then can adapt. So they can come in and teach a class to athletes. They could teach a class to seniors, people, you know, older who might not might have a hard time getting on and off the ground. We still try and have them do that because that's super important. But they can adapt. That teacher is super important because they're going to be adapting in real time to the people in the room. And that is, I think another thing is when you have the knowledge, that is such an empowerment for the teacher, because all of a sudden you come in and somebody tells you ahead of time, I really hurt my right shoulder. I don't know what's going on. And the teacher is going to be like I had somebody in class today who had said, and I said, okay, when you're coming down, you're squeezing your elbows in. You need to hold the scapula steady on the back and just bend the elbows a little bit. Don't even go all the way down. If I was just calling out the thing, it doesn't matter if I'm saying it well, if I'm giving all the information, if it is not translated, then I have to find a different way to say it. Give this person a way to adapt so that it works for that person. So yeah, teacher is very important.
And the person?
And that's...
Is the focus that we have on... the question was more meant a little bit into that, that kind of like we are putting the teachers perhaps on a certain podest, or we are like... This is the one who fixed me, and this is the teacher I admire. Or is it more the method that we are going to transmit, and that students are going to work with their own individual bodies? As it is a little bit about these. Do we the teacher I talked about that there is, like he said, there is a trap of falling inside when students say, I admire these class, or you helped me so much, or the yoga that you are teaching. And that is a little bit about that. If it's like, you know, where I want to go in.
Are you saying like the sage on the stage type complex? Yeah, we definitely do not have that. I mean, you know, Nat, here is my thought on that. A teacher becomes accustomed to that when they actually don't have a lot of knowledge. Because what they're basically saying is, I'm repeating what I've been told, and you're going to hear it because I know better. And that's this, when a teacher actually knows a lot of knowledge, what they're doing is sharing it and saying, and being able to say, like, this is a way of doing this. It's not necessarily going to look the same for everybody. Meaning, you're in plank. This is the alignment we want. Hey, someone, you might need to lower your knees. Oh, your wrists are hurting you. You might need to go on your knuckles. It's not like get in plank, stay there. This is good for you. You're going to get stronger, right? So it's absolutely a dynamic. I always feel like no matter if I'm like teaching a private or if I'm in a room with 50 people, I'm in there with them. I'm guiding them to the best of my ability with the knowledge that I have. And I'm using that knowledge to inform what I say to the people, not to impress them, but to help them. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm not fixing anybody. What I want more than anything is somebody to walk away and say, if I never saw Laura again, I learned something that I'm now going to incorporate in my life that I understand more. Laura didn't fix me. She actually just shared what she knows. And I'm going to use that. So it's really a passing on of knowledge about movement and about how to move. And that can be received in many different ways. But it's never that, like, do everything I say, I know best, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that doesn't work. Again, I think that comes from people who actually don't know very much. Right? When you have a smaller... And that's what I saw. And then the teachers would come to me and say, oh my gosh, I'm saying all these things. I actually don't even know if somebody were to say, well, how do I do this? I don't know what to say to them. So I just say, oh, we'll just do it this way. So it's like when you don't have as much knowledge, you don't have as much critical thinking because you don't have the expansiveness. And what I really want for myself and for my teachers is to be able to serve people, to be of service. And that's why people go into wellness, hopefully, is because they want to help people feel better. It's not ever from this place of I'm right and you're wrong. I've just found something that I think is universally really therapeutic because it's educational at its essence.
What was the most surprising thing, would you say, that you experienced within your own body, where you like came to a point where you said, oh my God, this is so amazing that like a body has this wisdom or can change or something like that?
Probably when I was practicing with, you know, this was years ago when I was 35, and I really loved this idea of inversions. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to do it. I just kind of was like, I'll never be able to do that. And I had a male trying to teach me how to press handstand. And I was like, this will never happen for me. And then I walked away and I remember waking up one day and I was like, I'm going to teach myself how to do this based on biomechanics, not based on somebody like who has a different body. And it's very easy for them to do this because they're just like, oh, you lift here and here. But I'm actually going to break it down into the biomechanics of it, like levers. If I need to lean onto my shoulder girdle, what needs to happen? And how do I do this? And so I taught myself how to do a handstand. And that was actually like a opening, like a gate just opened up. Because what I realized is when you do understand mechanics of the body, you can do a lot of things. It might take a very long time. Like if I wanted to lift 500 pounds, I'm not saying I could do that. There's going to be, you know, a cap on it, but I could learn to lift a lot heavier, mm-hmm. but it would take a while. I have to do little load, I'd little load, check my mechanics. It's mm-hmm. very similar with these other things. So that to me revolutionized everything. And so I started incorporating that in my classes and saying like, you don't need to learn how to do it. You don't need to ever do a handstand if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. But I want to share with you the empowerment you can get when you actually are in charge of your body and this pathway. And by the way, this is unique and different. So your brain's going to love it. It's joyful because who doesn't like to play on their hands? And we haven't done it in a while. And it also will bring you so much frustration. So it's going to give you an opportunity to have a different relationship with frustration. When you get frustrated, do you get angry? Do you give up? Do you get sad? Do you start talking bad to yourself? How about just breathe and say, you know what? I don't know if, and that's what a yoga is. It's the non-attachment. I don't know if I'm going to get to make this shape or not, but I'm going to take myself on the journey and discover more things about myself. And that's really what I felt when I like took from the physical therapy, the biomechanics, it revealed all these other things. So I have more patience in life because I know like things take time. Building my brand, I've always probably been the most patient one of anybody on my team. I have 10 team members and I'm always the one like, this is great. Cause I know endurance in the spirit and in the body will always get you ahead. Because a lot of people don't have that. They give up. And but how wonderful it is to not kind of know where something might go, but just really put your all into it.
Yeah, that's nice. And then feeling that it also spreads over to other parts of the life then where we develop and where we feel then, okay, it's possible to change or to do something. That's really nice. There is a lot inside this method. There's your wisdom, your knowledge of physiology of a lot of years, there's kinesiology, there is neurology, the functional movement patterns, everything. What I was asking myself is with which kind are you working in this method also with a philosophy pillar? Is there a philosophy that you are teaching, or is there also like a spiritual practice inside, or are you saying No, there is not, because that is not what it's about, which is fine also.
Well, and that's the other shift I would say that I've always made, is that there's not a separation.
Mm-hmm.
So we can posit something as being physical and we can posit something as being spiritual, but the reality is we are all, and everything is amplified when we unite that. So spiritual to me does not necessarily mean reading a text and then trying to translate that into some pithy idea. That's fine. But the reality is, for me, it's more like, how are we incorporating these principles and concepts? And then what comes up for us? When we are changing movement habits, we are inevitably changing breathing habits, habits of how we handle ourselves in lives. When we are more strong and united and consolidated and organized in our body, we have more energy, and that means we have more energy to give to others. We're less concerned mm-hmm. about ourselves all the time. So those are layered in there, but they're never preached, because what I want people to do is actually feel it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting when people go through my teacher training, 90% of them come in and they say they want to learn more about the body, the functional anatomy. They're so geeking out over it. It's so dense.
Mm-hmm.
When they come out 10 weeks later, those 90% say, what I was blown away with is the philosophy. Because I layer in concepts, questions, ideas, because when you get to know yourself better, when you find that core, your core is your center. It is not your abdominals being strong. It is how you mm-hmm. hold on to your values, how you hold on to what matters to you, and you do it in your body. That translates into your life. So when, mm-hmm. like, I've been vegan for 21 years, I've never waffled. Why would I? It's very clear to me that is in alignment. Mm-hmm. So alignment in your body is also alignment in your spirit. It is not a separate thing. It really isn't. The people who, to me, illustrate this overall just compassion and kindness and generosity are very connected to themselves. And they're connected, the best way to connect is through the vehicle of the body. We discover things, again, we'll discover how we get, we discover our triggers, we discover, but that's where we change. We can change our wiring, and we do it through our body, and then inevitably we do it, all of a sudden, if we're paying attention on the mat to our alignment, we're gonna pay attention to the things in the world that we might have just brushed over that really are troubling and we'd like to do something about. So I don't preach it, but it's infused in everything, absolutely. Because I think when people feel more empowered, I know this, when they're more empowered, that power is used to do good. When people are using power not to do good, it's usually because they aren't solid inside.
Really nice answer. Because I was thinking about these preaching thing also, because there is like there is classes or there is teachers where we really, where it soaks in and it's something we are taking away with us. I, as writing and words person, I love that. But there's also like the parts when I experienced 2 weeks ago where I went to a class and was emptyless preaching. And I thought like the class would have been much better or fuller without the approach of having the need to preach something. And that is nice mm-hmm. when you say it is coming over the body as a vehicle. And I think it's also something that makes it a little bit more easy for some people, because not everyone has these perhaps deep dive connection, and is also not needed. That is nice. I like it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what I try and do is do what lands for me. And that is that it's layered in there. So today I taught a class called Power Up, and it was like mm-hmm. making our body this conduit of energy. And then after everybody's experiencing that, that's like, then there's the invitation, how can I use my power to not only make myself feel clearer and brighter, mm-hmm. but to help others. So those, and then you can read a poem or something like that too, but it has to layer mm-hmm. into this, what has been already you know, the thematics of it. So yeah, I've never liked anybody telling me how I should feel. So I think from my own experience, what resonated always with me is this invitation to explore inward and then to, you know, pose some questions, or maybe like with some writing or some kind of question that to layer onto it so that I walk away and I feel like, oh, that landed and I'm taking that with me.
Nice. What would you say, why the strength, the strengthening of the body, and also the working with the so many different muscles we're having in the body is so important, and not only in our 30s, but especially in our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s?
Well, if you think of something that is structurally sound, you know, if you think of a building, like there's a solidness to it, there's a security to it. Then you think of something weak and there's like a flimsiness to it. There's a lack of security. So at many levels, the metaphysical and the physical, we need strength to really move through life, literally, metaphorically. Life is going to challenge us, and to fall apart is going to be easier if you aren't really held as strong into center. And with that, we need to feel strong in all directions with all types of movements. When we're lengthening, when we're contracting, we need to feel it in all kinds of ways that we always have this sense of structure. So I talk about, again, the house. You know, you frame your house, you build the foundation. So we do that from our pelvis, our spine, all of our core muscles, our postural muscles, and then you can add on the lovely, you know, things on it. But it relies on the foundational structures, and strength is doing that. Now, strength at a physiological level, you have to challenge your bones and your muscles and the soft tissue connections so that they can hold their strength. You know, you're in bed for a week and you lose strength, not moving, right? You do lose strength. So just think about that over the years, all the people that are spending 12 hours a day sitting, not moving, they are diminishing their strength. And then it's not that getting older, you're just necessarily going to be weaker, but it's like compound interest. You've had more years of not working on your strength. Mm-hmm. So the diminished strength is really shows up in the later years. And then of course you've got hormones and stuff on top of that, because our hormones are not just there for sexual reproduction. They are there for everything in our body, for our neurology, for our heart, for our bones. So one way you can, you know, kind of like biohack your strength is really adding load, adding and working on it so that you can maintain your structure and you feel strong and vital and not fragile, because fragility is not a good feeling. When nobody wants to feel that way, we can't handle our emotions as well. We can't handle other people's emotions as well. We can't handle situations as well. So the idea is to have strength, because strength in this way is about integrity.
Mm-hmm. And from all of your trainings and people you work with, what would you say is in which part of the body appears the biggest problem, or with which part the people always have issues or questions about?
Well, I'll answer that by saying, because there's a lot, but really the biggest problem area that affects everything else is your core. So your core. Just take your limbs away, that's your core.
And so that's your pelvis, also, that's right. Why you're saying on your website, when you connect to your core, it changes life.
Changes everything. Changes everything.
I didn't want to interrupt, but I like that sentence. Yeah. That's why I wanted to just...
It changes everything. Mm-hmm. So when somebody says, I have an elbow issue, I have a knee issue, I go to the core, because it might be expressed there, but the issue has started in the center of the body. Because this is the structural foundation of our house. So if we're not holding this well, it might show up in a low back, it might show up in the neck, it might show up in the shoulder, but it could also show up down the chain in the limbs. So the biggest issue is always the core. And when you really learn how to, the thing about engaging the core, it's very, when you get it, but until you get it, it just seems like, oh, do I just hold my belly in? Do I just, it's, you train your brain to know how to hold yourself in space based on the demand. I'm sitting in a chair. I don't want to slump, but that's all that the major demand is. So I'm sitting up tall. I have a small engagement in my postural muscles. They have a lot of, like I said, they are made for long distance. They can do this. But if I haven't trained it on my mat, I'm going to start to slouch and that'll feel okay. For me, slouching, my brain is like, what are you doing? So what you get with your core is your core has a huge connection into your brain. When you are stronger in your core, the connection and wiring and messaging from your brain is faster. You are more in touch with, this doesn't feel right. I'm not in alignment. You're more in touch with your gut. This doesn't feel right emotionally. I'm not in alignment. It affects everything. So you, when people talk about core, it's not doing a bunch of sit-ups. It's literally challenging your core, which is everything but your limbs, in a variety of positions with the demands of gravity, with the demands of your body weight load, with demands of different levers, which is when I change my elbows and I bend them versus straightening them. Those are all kinesiology and physiological changes that also create a neurological change, which makes your core stronger. So we just want what's called an adaptable core. I don't need to be like working really hard to sit tall unless I'm usually kind of slumpy. And I might, then those people do have to, you know, try and work harder.
Interesting. As a mom, what would you say? How we teach the kids to move like in a mindful and in a healthy way? Or how did you taught your kid?
I think the number one thing is to model it. I never told my kids, hey, get on the mat with me, but they saw me moving. We did things together that moved. My kid, yeah. You know, my children and my husband, we've done 3 coast to coast hikes through England, through Scotland, through Wales. It's part of our lifestyle and I model it. Mm-hmm. So my son is going to play basketball in college next year. He was recruited for that. I didn't tell him like, you need to practice all the, but he has seen me mm-hmm. practice over and over every day. And so he knows, like, it is just in him. I'm going to practice. I know that to do this shot, I'm not going to do it 10 times or 100. I'm going to do it 10,000 times. And so I think it's just infused in our life. My daughter is also really into movement because movement brings joy. Movement is the thing that can shift you from being in a shitty mood to a good mood mm-hmm. more than anything else, more than watching a show. All you're doing when watching a show, and there's nothing wrong with it, is you're just putting a pause on the feeling, but it's going to stay. But how you actually shift out of a negative feeling to a better feeling is through movement.
Which movement you are doing? If you are having like a really shitty day or you wake up and you feel directly, oh, it's grumpy or I'm in a bad mood, is there a certain movement that you like always do or are you just getting in a mat freely and you know, I just need to move and then it's going to pass?
I would say I don't have that often, but if I like, I always roll one shoulder at a time. Like this to me is literally like scrubbing the fascia of the neck, the shoulder, if I've been on the computer. And I just kind of like, ha, it's like almost like a flap, you know, mm-hmm. but it's also moving some fascia. If I really had something that I wanted to like get out, I would do some kind of plyo, some kind of like jumping up and down. It can be 1 minute. I promise you, shaking, doing core work. People do core work and they say, oh my God, my anger came up and I almost felt like I was going to scream. And I say, okay, good. Like, that's good. Because emotions are energy in motion. So stuck emotions are not in motion, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to move our body, to heat up our body, to go deep, to unclog some of those feelings. And so for me, I don't have too many of those moments, fortunately, because I'm doing it daily. I'm doing it daily. So I don't, it's like I'm kind of in this good, balanced state. And But if I needed it, those are the things. I would just start rolling my shoulders, heh, open my mouth, do some core work, do some plyo, and all should be good. Do a little skipping. Skipping, I mean, it's really hard to be in a bad mood and skip. It just doesn't work. Yeah.
Okay, the last three ones, Lara. There's always the same questions at the end of every episode that we're having. What would you say, what do we have enough of?
What do we not have enough of?
No, what do we have enough of in general, really in general?
I think we have, you know, enough. Well, that's an interesting question. What do we have enough of? I mean, I think we all have more than enough of a lot of things. And I think we have, I think we have enough love to spread. I think that love is not just love a romantic partner. It is compassion and that feeling of energy that we want others well, that we want others to be successful, that we want others, you know, to feel our kindness. And sometimes we don't give that out, and we have enough to give because it's renewable, right? We're never going to just love and that's it. We have enough love. So I think we can remember that we're not losing anything by giving more of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And what do we need more?
More compassion. More compassion, I think, more patience. We live in a very, very, we know that, like, we live in a world that is like moving very, very fast. And that can really get our ticker going, and we can be impatient. And then in consequence to that, I think, not as kind or compassionate. Mm-hmm. And so I think the thing is to notice where you are losing your patience, and what are the things that can feed the patience? Well, practicing on the mat, because you don't have other distractions, really trying to get freer of distractions. We're not going to ever be free of them. Even if we got rid of our technology, there's always going to be some distraction. But I think we need to develop more patience and realize that we want to stretch out the time, not compress it and try and fit everything in and make it happen right away. I think anything that's worthwhile is worth investing time mm-hmm. and having patience to do that. So I think we all probably need a little more patience.
Mm-hmm. What was the last thing that inspired you? Mostly it's a book that people are suggesting that they read, the last book, but it can also be a film or a piece of art or something like that, whatever you read.
Well, I recently read a beautiful book called Homegoing, and it is beautiful because I've been in Africa 6 or 7 times, and so it's really about all of the connectedness of Europe and Africa and colonizing, and America and Africa and being part of the slave trade. And then it spans about 100 years, and just this idea of, you know, stripping somebody from home, but not just stripping them from their physical home, but from their rights and their inner home, you know. And it's such beautiful writing, and it's really just, I think it's important to realize, like, our capacity for, as humans, for like horrible, evil things, because that makes it even more important that we show up with compassion and love, because we know these exist. And so this book is just magnificent and like heart-wrenching and all of those things. So check it out.
Sounds really good. Lara, thank you really, really much for your time, for the really interesting answers, and for talking about your method. So who's interested to practice with you and to know more and to get into all of this knowledge can practice with you in Germany. So tell us when you are hitting the stage here, and also a little bit perhaps about, because there's also the possibility to practice online with you all the time. There's a huge online studio.
Yeah, so you can just go to lityoga.com. It's L-Y-T. And so back to that idea, like LIT stands for Lara's Yoga Technique, but it's also this acronym for feeling lit up, because when you move well, you feel well, your spirit is lit up. So it's we don't separate it, it all comes together. And I just want everybody to feel more lit up, because it's a very, like, my community is a very happy place. It's a really lovely place, very communal. And that's very important to me. So we have a really wonderful community, lityoga.com. You can look on there for my online classes at the Lit Daily, and then my online teacher training. I have a 200 and a 300 hour training. And we also have a directory with people all around the world who've been trained by me and things that we're going to be doing. So yes, we're coming to Europe. We're in Frankfurt, July 18th through 20th. And I'm going to be teaching, I think it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. But that information will be, if you go to lityoga.com and look at like other or workshops, that'll be under there. Yeah. And then you can find me on Instagram, Lara.Hyman, and Lit Yoga Method, both of those on Instagram.
There is a huge Instagram channel, huge because of a lot of followers, but also huge because of a lot of videos that you are showing, and you're giving special instructions, and there is a lot to learn and a lot to find when there is little injuries or things we are stuck with in the practice. So thank you so much. We are putting the dates in the show notes so that people can see it also after listening to you. And yes, thanks a lot. And I wish you a wonderful day and a wonderful week, Lara.
Thank you so much, Simone. I really appreciate your time and your wonderful questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ihr Lieben, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören, vielen Dank fürs Dabeisein. Das war das Interview mit Lara Hyman. Ich fand es sehr interessant zu hören, dass es doch sehr unterschiedliche Ansichten auf Yoga und auf Bewegung gibt. Ich habe einiges mitgenommen, wenn ich auch an der einen oder anderen Stelle das für mich selber ein bisschen anders praktiziere. Aber ich finde es trotzdem immer ganz toll, unterschiedliche Bilder zu haben, unterschiedliche Stile kennenzulernen und euch somit auch die Möglichkeit zu geben, das für euch zu finden, wo ihr sagt, das passt besonders gut zu mir oder das resoniert mit mir. Wir haben das schon im Interview gesagt, schaut auf Instagram vorbei. Sabine schaut da immer gerne vorbei, wenn es um unteren Rücken zwickt bei Lara auf ihrem Kanal. Es gibt sehr, sehr viele Tipps. Es gibt wirklich gute Anleitungen für alle, die irgendwelche körperlichen Beschwerden oder Probleme haben. Also das Physio-Wissen ist sehr, sehr groß und da könnt ihr euch sicher die ein oder andere Inspiration holen. Vielen Dank, dass ihr dabei wart. Wer die Lit-Yoga-Methode ausprobieren will, findet im Abo eine tolle Klasse von Motivity. Das ist ein Studio in Deutschland und die beiden Mädels haben bei Lara gelernt und haben eine tolle Klasse zur Verfügung gestellt. Alles Liebe und bis bald, eure Simone.